This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
I live right in the middle of the woods. This big thing was 75 feet away from me, smelled awful, devoured a whole deer carcass, and then took off and, like, screamed, screeched, and took off across the street. And I know you guys are going to think I'm crazy, but I'm dead serious. There was something very big, bigger, a lot bigger than me, out here. How long ago did this happen? Immediately. I don't know if animal control, I mean, it is a very large, hairy animal of some kind.
Now, was it standing on two or four?
Well, I told you it was standing on two legs. You're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm serious. It ran off at breaking limbs and trees. And it kind of screeched how a very creepy, scary thing is. Like I said, I live in a tent. We're in the woods. And I just saw this freaky, scary, very large creature devour a deer and run off across the road.
Okay,
I don't know.
Is there any way that we can have an officer contact you?
Yeah, I guess it's this number.
Okay, and do you see signs of a dead deer, blood, whatever?
I'm not going to go check it out right at the moment. Is that okay? Like I said, I thought somebody should know there's a very large something big enough to eat a deer and as a
predator.
Are you
seeing someone there?
Yes, ma'am.
You think you do?
Yes, ma'am.
I lived in the woods for years. I swear to God, I've never seen nothing like this. This is bigger than me.
And it,
I'm 6 feet. It's bigger than me.
It's very large. He carried the carcass off. I mean,
oh, he carried
like,
it
with
okay.
Nothing like this.
But I know it picked up that deer and walked with 2 feet.
It's a very large something that smells bad and is bigger than we are. My husband's a very large. Nothing's ever scared him, and, we both saw it, so.
Okay. All right. We'll have an officer patrol that area.
Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange. The unbelievable. The untenable.
Johnny and Billy here, and we like to talk about weird topics like UFOs, alien abduction, near-death, afterlife, ghosts. I guess ghosts would be afterlife, because ghosts are after they're living, right?
Well, that's kind of true, I guess. I think when we talk about afterlife, we talk mostly about going to another dimension or life after death versus ghosts, which are spirits that inhabit the real plane.
And you know, there have been hundreds, if not thousands, of credible people with credible reports of afterlife or near-death experiences like you've had.
Millions.
I'm not saying you've had millions yourself.
No.
Or ghost sightings or Sasquatch sightings or Dogman or you name it.
Yeah.
I don't see how people can brush it off like so easily, like, oh, that's a hoax, that's a misidentification, that they're just crazy, they're lying, they just want attention. Bill, you just want attention.
But the paranormal has been around for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in fact maybe even tens of thousands of years. That's where God came from, you know, the concept of God. People thought that there was, you know, something more to this life, that there was a creator, there was, you know, something that moved them. They felt the spirit, especially before we had all the distractions in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's only been in the last, 60 years that we've had television, last 100 or so years that we've had radio, about 150. The automobile is really only about a little over 100 years old. And, of course, the Internet is, a relatively new concept.
Yeah.
And all of these things. I mean, even cell phones. First time I heard about cell phones was in 1978, I believe.
Yeah.
And I worked for an automotive research company, which was a division of British Petroleum. And this guy brought this car in for us to check out. And he had a telephone-looking thing on the dash of his car. And I said, oh, you have a CB radio. And he said, no, it's a telephone. And I said, well, how does it work? He says, well, if you want to make a lot of money, he says, invest in my company. And I asked him what the name of the company was, and he said, Cellular One.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And did you?
No, I was stupid. Yeah. I didn't invest. I could have bought stocks for pennies.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd have been a multi-billionaire today. But this is what happens, is that people have an idea and they follow through. And it starts small and it grows. You know, this was 1978. And we didn't even hear much about cell phones until the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't become commercially affordable until, what, the mid-90s?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's that's a 20-year growth period, which is relatively short.
Yeah.
You know, if you're 20 years old, that seems like a long time. If you're 80 years old, that's yesterday. So, it's interesting how technology grows. And, it, you know, when we look at it, a lot of the technology that we have grows from science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the original Star Trek television series, at the time, all that technology was foreign.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the communicators that flip open.
Yeah, those are cell phones.
Yeah, now we have them. They're cell phones. The doors that open when you walk up to them.
Yeah.
Those didn't exist at that time.
Yeah.
So that's something, that was something entirely new. Now, you know, we almost expect the doors to open on their own. But all of this technology, I was just reading an article about ion propulsion,
mm-hmm.
which was part of the Star Trek, I think it was one of the third generation of Star Trek TV series. But today, that kind of ion propulsion system actually exists. NASA uses it. So, and there's lots of other things that they're currently in existence, but we don't hear about them because they're not commercially available. And for some of these things, they won't become commercially available for, you know, probably another 10, 15, 20 years. Flying cars,
mm-hmm.
maglev cars, maglev trains. That's a maglev is magnetic levitation, where magnets embedded in the vehicle and the roadbed allow the magnetic forces to push it off the ground so that you don't need wheels.
Yeah, like when you put two like positive magnets, they kind of bounce from each other.
Two strong magnets, and you try to put them together with similar poles. They repel each other. So, this has been used in trains, in particular, like monorail type trains, where they have two magnetic forces that push against each other. It's also in propulsion systems. They use that same kind of magnetic force to propel things. But all these technologies were something that were someone's idea or thought long ago. When those thoughts are expressed, like in sci-fi movies and television shows, it triggers in other people a thought about how to make that reality. And they work on it. We have some really smart people in this world.
Thanks.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure about this country, but...
Oh!
And, but people are working on this stuff. They're out there developing these ideas and trying to make them reality. And then once they become reality, of course, you know, it's expensive to do the research and the early production stuff. But then once it reaches a certain point where it becomes commercially available, then they make their money back.
What about improving our own technology from ancient technology? We talked about that last week in the Egyptians and how we've improved some of our technologies when we discover the technologies that they used thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
We talked about their ability to possibly generate electricity and have electric lights or some kind of lighting system.
Now they found tools in California dating 120,000 to 140,000 years ago, like sophisticated or more sophisticated tools.
Did they say Black and Decker on them?
Yeah. What was that one tool that they found that was 50,000 years old and it was made of metal and we weren't using metal then? Do you remember what that was?
I don't remember what it was.
But you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I do. I think the you know, we think of the use of metals as a more modern, last couple, 300 years or so.
Yeah.
Maybe 400 years. But it's not that the metals didn't exist. You know, they exist naturally in nature. You know, it's certainly possible that other cultures could have found a way to put this to use. People were very inventive and very ingenious. Even thousands of years ago, they you know, we still had use for tools to hunt, to produce food, to plow the ground. They may not have been, you know, big motorized tools like we have today, but the concepts were the same. You know, the shapes and styles of the tools.
Mm-hmm.
So these ideas have been around for a long time, and over time we've improved on them. Technology in the last 150 years has improved by leaps and bounds over the last, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 years. If that trend continues, can you imagine what we will have maybe 50 or 100 years from today?
If we're still around.
If we're still around, if we don't use that technology to destroy ourselves. So we have now technology that allows us to store electricity for longer periods of time. I have a device that was embedded in my chest. It's a combination pacemaker and defibrillator.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a battery in there that allows this thing to work.
What charges it up?
Nothing. That's the whole thing. It lasts about 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
Now, of course, they have to cut my chest open again to replace it.
Oh, nice.
But that's only once every 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of a minor surgery. They just kind of unzip the original scar and or go in next to it go in and take the old battery out and put a new one in.
Are they Duracell, Energizer?
Probably. There's a little bunny in there that
keeps going and going.
Keeps going, running on a treadmill. So the technology grows. You know, even 20 years ago, which isn't a long time unless you're 20 years old, and it was a long time, but 20 years ago, this technology wasn't there. People that had these devices, you know, had to go in more frequently and have the batteries changed.
Mm-hmm.
So now we also have methods to charge without connecting something to a wire. I mean, you can have a charger for your cell phone where you just set it on a pad or, you know, in a cradle and it charges it without ever having to plug it in. So I'm sure that that technology will soon be used to charge these devices that we have in our chest.
I hear they're working on ways to implant memories in your brain.
To implant memories.
Like Total Recall, you know, you go to a place, you know, you want a memory of a nice vacation where you're a spy or a high roller.
Yeah, it's kind of a like a fantasy world that they can kind of inject you into.
Yeah.
And there's actually the Arnold Schwarzenegger version.
Yeah, that was the original.
That was the original.
Yeah, and then what's-his-name came out with one, too. I didn't watch it, but it didn't look
I didn't like the second one. I liked the Schwarzenegger version, but
yeah,
I didn't like the second one. It just didn't... I had a hard time following it. It's kind of like the Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I mean, people just love that stuff, that Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I watched the original, and I really didn't get anything out of it. I struggled with the whole thing. In fact, I really didn't want to watch it all. I got bored with it.
From the original?
From the original.
Okay.
And so I thought, okay, well, I'll watch the new one, the 2049 version or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
2149 version, the futuristic version. And I had the same experience. I mean, you know, 10, 15 minutes into it, I was bored to death. I really didn't want to watch anymore. It didn't attract me. But, you know, that's just me. I mean, I'm an action junkie, and I like some sci-fi, but not all sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
I find some sci-fi to be a bit boring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that is they spend a lot of time trying to set the scene.
Yeah.
There's a movie that came out a few years ago called Ender's Game. Did you see that one?
Mm-mm.
And it's a sci-fi about a futuristic culture, you know, that's doing battle out in the universe, and you know, about these networks and all this fantastical stuff that is out there, and people think that this is a very modernistic story.
Mm-hmm.
But the book that it's based on was written in 1980, before any of this existed.
Yeah.
And yet, they were able to predict this in a movie, and a lot of what's in the movie is actually applicable today.
Mm.
It's there. It's technology that's available, at least maybe not to the consumer,
yeah,
but it's out there. And that's the other thing, is as consumers, we're oftentimes only aware of the technology that's available to us. But that technology, the greater technology exists, but it's simply not feasible to produce it for mass consumption. You know, technology is a good thing. I'm trying to work on some information about artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
That's the next big step in technology, I believe.
No, I listened to that interview with Elon Musk where he addressed Congress. It's not him addressing Congress, but he's talking about how he addressed Congress, he talked to President Obama, he's talked to all these officials about some kind of regulation in the development of artificial intelligence and how potentially dangerous it is or can be, and how we might want to slow down a bit to put some protocols in place so something bad doesn't happen. And
right.
The way he put it was just like nobody was interested, or they just didn't know what to do.
Well, because they don't know what it is.
Yeah.
They don't understand it. So if they don't understand it, they don't want to take the time to understand it and see what the dangers are. I've been reading a couple of books on AI. Now, they're fictional books, but the technology is the same. In the book I just finished, the AI was originally used for making people commit suicide.
Hmm.
So this was a computer system, a huge computer system, that could send messages to people. It could research their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And find things, negative things, that would taunt them.
Mm.
And it would put thoughts into their mind. And it would send them text messages that would basically drive them crazy.
Wow.
But they were self-erasing text messages, so that when these people committed suicide and they looked through their phones, they wouldn't find anything.
Yeah.
Because the message would only be there for a short time, and then basically would self-destruct.
Yeah.
Which is like we had back in the Mission Impossible days.
Yeah, you know? This message will self-destruct.
Yeah, except that it was on tape, and it was tape that would burn up. After it was read, after it was listened to.
Wow.
But these AIs can also access basically everything about your life. Since everything is computerized these days, it can access your bank accounts, your utility bills, and it, because it can think for itself, it can take all this information about you and draw conclusions about you, who you are, your activities, and then it can send out information that could be damaging to you. In the case that book I just finished, it talked about the AI and how it basically set up a Mexican cartel or South American drug cartel leader to be arrested, and it set up, it made it look like somebody else ratted him out when that person didn't. It was the AI that ratted him out in the name of someone else.
Mm.
And then that other person knew that their life was worthless and they committed suicide.
Wow.
So, but these things can, I mean, they can get into public records.
Mm-hmm.
They can get into your voting records, into your, and like I say, they can get your utility bills. They know how many cars you bought in the last 10 years. They know what kind of food you buy, because if you buy it with, other than cash, there's an electronic record of it. Almost everything we do, there's an electronic record. Unless you live completely off the grid and don't use credit cards or don't have a social security number, there's an electronic record of everything you do.
Hmm.
So, these AIs can access that, and they can access it very quickly. Sometimes in a matter of seconds. They can access archived newspaper articles. They can access legal records. They can access corporate records. Anything about you, they can access. So they can create a whole dossier on you and anything you've ever done within a matter of seconds. They're very fast. They can research all this stuff in a matter of minutes. So it can be very dangerous, and it's true that we do need some kind of regulation, or it'll just run rampant. It'll be used. It'll be used against us. It'll be used as a weapon. Because what's the first thing that governments do when they get this kind of technology? They weaponize it.
Mm. Well, a Strange Harbor where we talk about the weird, and we've been talking about artificial intelligence. Ooh. Coming up, more strangeness.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and if you have any strange experiences you'd like to share with the class, you can log on to strangeharbor.net. We got a nifty little contact form there. We also have various posts of interesting weird things, whether it's Stonehenge or the Superhenge, or we got Ronnie Dumont's Find Muck posted on there. And our buddy, our correspondent, David Ellis, he's been posting some interesting things that he's found. Also, have you had any strange experiences this last week?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, my wife and I were going out. Sometimes we go out in the evening to walk the dog, and if it's dark out, rather than walking up and down our street, we usually go out by the beach and walk her. I don't know why that's different than walking up and down the street. But there aren't as many cars out on the beach.
Oh, yeah. So,
but we were pulling out of the driveway the other night, and I saw this thing that was coming towards us. And it was moving slowly, and it looked like it was very low, you know, just like not much over the rooftops.
Mm-hmm.
And it had four white lights in a square pattern, and then it had a red light at the front and a red light at the back. And so I rolled the window of the car down to see if I could hear it, and it made kind of a it almost sounded like a small plane, but the engine was a little quieter and faster than a small plane. The engine was revving higher than the speed would indicate. And it flew over our heads and then went out towards the ocean. And at first I thought it might be a plane, then I thought, no, it's a drone. It's a large drone. And then once it got over us, I mean, I couldn't see anything but the lights. I thought, God, if it's higher up, it has to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's, you know, as low as I think it might be, it's still got to be pretty big. And it was moving much slower than what an airplane would move. So, you know, my rationalization is that it was a drone, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was something else. And again, you know, I was so enthralled by it, I didn't take a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I had my cell phone there, I didn't take a picture. I didn't call the UFO hotline and report it. You know, none of that stuff. So, you know, this is why we don't have great pictures of this stuff, because, mm-hmm. you know, when we see it, that's the last thing we think of, is capturing it on a photograph.
Well, according to Bill Puckett's website, UFOs Northwest, that's UFOSNW.com, there have been some people that have taken pictures and video. A disc-shaped object seen, video taken. If you log on to his website, he also has a still image of the object highlighted by the witness. Five disc-shaped objects spin and pulsate. Objects with five blinking lights, one in middle, two on each side. A video taken of red-white blinking light from airliner. Now, the lights weren't from the airliner. The video taken was on an airliner. They were on an airplane, and then they see this object, and they shoot the video.
Right.
Strange diamond shape found in photo. Strange object descends into view of security cameras. Man says he was aboard an alien spacecraft January 1965. Several view orange ball of light that changed colors. Photo video taken a bright light UFO. Strange object found in photo taken by game cam. And it's kind of weird. That game cam photo is similar to the other game cam photo. I wonder if they're the same model and make. Because if it is, then maybe it's some kind of problem
glitch.
Glitch
in that.
With that. A meteor hits close to Air Force Base in Greenland. Now, here's a report. A meteor hit close to a U.S. Air Force Base in Greenland. It was confirmed by NASA, but the Air Force has remained silent. According to NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, listed the impact on their website, it occurred a little over 26 miles north of Thule Air Base. It was traveling at 15 miles per second. It exploded with a force of 2.1 kilotons. It was about 15% of the strength of the first atomic bomb dropped in World War II. The Air Force treatment of the meteor crash parallels their treatment of the UFO subject. The Air Force has long been known to be silent and subversive regarding UFOs. So,
but, you know, we had a meteor come down not far from my house.
Mm-hmm.
18 miles from my house.
An alleged meteor.
Well, I mean, that's... That's what they're saying it is. That was what all the tracking was. And it was, I mean, the explosion was, I mean, it just rocked our whole house. I mean,
rocked our house, and we're far from it.
Yeah, yeah. It's so, and, you know, there's a bright flash of light. And so I think these things probably happen more frequently than we hear about or that we know about. But because everything moves so fast in our world, you know, it happens today, it's reported tomorrow, and then it's forgotten. You know, the news cycle is 3 days long. So when something happens, it gets covered for about 3 days, then it vanishes. There's very little follow-up, you know, because of the nature of our news sources. They have to keep coming up with new information to keep us entertained. So it's an interesting thing that we don't hear more about this.
Yeah.
But I believe that there are scientists who probably follow this stuff. I mean, if you're interested in it, there are probably scientific organizations or even individual scientists that follow this stuff. And they would have more information.
Well, even Bill Puckett of UFOs Northwest, he's not necessarily an official scientist, but he's kind of a scientist.
He's a scientist.
You know, he documents this stuff really well.
Extremely well, yeah. He's probably one of the best in this country and maybe in the world for documenting UFOs.
I think I should book him for the UFO Summit.
Oh, I would think so.
And
this guy is fascinating.
When I bring him over, I'll have him come in like a couple days early, and he can be in the studio with us. What do you think?
That would be great. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
We'll stream that.
So yeah, I've seen him talk, and I've interviewed him in the past, and have had a chance to know him a little bit. And he's a fascinating guy. He's a really smart guy, and he's very, very thorough. You know, this is why it's important to have people that can be thorough, almost obsessive about following up on this information. Because it's important that we keep these documents, that we track things, that we don't give up on them in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we live by the news cycle, you know, in the mainstream media and such, you know, we kind of lose track of what's really happening because we keep hearing more and more information that distracts us.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can follow these scientific breakthroughs, if we can follow things like meteor sightings and UFO sightings and such, I think we'd be amazed at what's happening in this world.
I heard this on a documentary that the Earth goes through some type of cataclysmic event every, you know, X amount of years. And we're about 13,000 years overdue.
Now, are you talking about the polar switch?
Not necessarily a polar shift, but, you know, a huge asteroid or meteor or just something. Could these little meteors that we've been having semi-frequently kind of be a sign that, kind of like the movie Armageddon, like it started out with showers here, a meteor there, an asteroid here, and all of a sudden, you know, here comes the big one. Is the big one coming?
Well, it's a distinct possibility. You know, that the Japanese, this didn't get much press, but the Japanese landed two spacecraft on an asteroid. And are going to, the spacecraft have the ability to explore the asteroid, drill into it, and even extract minerals and other things from the asteroid to determine its makeup. Now, I don't believe they have the ability to mine the asteroid.
Are they on it right now?
They're on it right now.
Wow.
So this took place, I think, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But I think
now, where's the asteroid at?
Well, it's, you know, out in space. It's somewhere, you know, close enough that they could shoot, you know, a spacecraft up and land on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably isn't terribly far away. You know, there are a lot of asteroids and meteors and even comets within our solar system that we never hear about because they don't come very close to the Earth. But they're certainly well within a distance that we can travel to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can send a spacecraft to Mars in a relatively short time now.
Mm-hmm.
With the increases in technology, we can be exploring Saturn and Jupiter and some of the other planets in a relatively short period of time. Again, it comes up with these ion propulsion devices that can mm-hmm. be used that are much faster than the current, liquid or solid fuel rockets.
Yeah.
So, as our technology develops, we develop the ability to go farther, faster. And you get there in a matter of, I don't know when the Japanese shot this these rockets up there, but it probably wasn't too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, so, you know, our technology is growing. We're going to learn more and grow more, but we also have to invest in that technology. We have to invest in those efforts and then also not utilize those efforts to, you know, do harm to ourselves and our planet.
You know, a friend of mine, he'd worked out in the woods all of his life. He took the, you know, I've never seen anything out in the woods. I've been out there, you know, 50 years.
Yeah.
Never seen anything. Until he met me. No, but then he started noticing more. I don't know why it's changed for him. I don't think he's lying. And he's had others with him. Because he goes out and picks mushrooms. He hunts bear and you know, he's legally... He fishes every day. He's like a fishing junkie. So he's always out in the woods. Now he's starting to notice things that he may not have noticed before. One instance he told me about last night where he and his son were out picking mushrooms and that you never pull them out of the ground. You cut them out because
right.
it leaves those spores there and they come back and grow. Well, first of all, he felt like he was being watched, and that's common for Sasquatch activities, like you feel like you're being watched. So he wanted to take a little break, so he goes back to his truck. Son comes back too, and he's like, why are we leaving early? And he's like, we're not leaving early. He's like, well, you called me back. You whistled at me and called me back, because that's how they communicate with each other. So they're not yelling, hey, Joe, it's time to go back. They do whistles and knocks and things. He's like, I didn't call you back. He's like, you were whistling, signaling me. So something or someone was whistling the specific signal to his son, letting him know we were leaving.
Yeah.
But what was it? Who was it? Nobody else out in the woods with him.
That's interesting. I think that people have sightings or they see unusual things, but they don't recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you buy a new car. You know, you think, boy, this is unique. Nobody else has one of these.
Yeah.
And you get out on the road and you see them all over the place.
All over the place, yeah.
Well, you never paid much attention before you became familiar with it.
Yeah.
So they've always been there, but you weren't familiar with it, so you didn't pay attention. So it didn't register on you. If you become more aware, and this is something I talk about when I lecture about the value of the near-death experience and what it means is awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Being aware of our surroundings, getting familiar with everything around us, getting to the point where we can see things that we wouldn't normally see.
Mm-hmm.
We can become more aware. I think that the average person probably only sees or registers probably not even half of what's actually there around them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't pay attention and they don't have an awareness, something that would be of value to them.
Well, according to the BFRO website, daytime sighting while fishing. I was fishing, I made a cast, followed my lure in flight. When it hit the water, I noticed movement beyond my lure on the side of a hill. I couldn't believe my eyes. It was gray, about 7 or 8 feet tall. It was hard to judge the height because of the steepness of the hill. It was hanging on one tree and grabbing another when it was coming down the hill. It froze in its tracks when it noticed me looking at him. He slowly pulled himself back up the hill. Then he stood there for 2 seconds and looked at me. Then he continued up the hill, never making a sound. I was about 20 yards away. I went home and rationalized it for a couple days before I told my friend about what I'd seen. Before I could describe it to him, he told me what color it was. He said it was seen the same time the year before on the Ice Age Trail about a quarter mile from his house. Now, other stories on this sighting. Yes, the year before, three-quarters of a mile away from the same one who was seen standing at the entrance of the Ice Age Trail. 30 years ago, on Little Sand Lake, there was one sighted that was about 3 miles as the crow flies from upper, blah, 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 anyway, by an Indian reservation. And this was 4 p.m. It was a sunny day, clear blue sky, daytime sighting.
Pretty amazing.
Now, he could be lying.
Why?
I'm just trying to be a skeptic here. He could be lying about it.
He could.
Kind of detailed for a lie. Okay, let's talk about misidentification. Could have been a bear, right?
Could have been.
Bears can be gray, right?
Hey, but I don't think they usually back up.
Yeah, and they don't
that much or
hold trees and pull each other, pull yourself up by a tree. They climb trees.
They do. And bears can stand on their hind legs.
They can, but they can't really, you don't see them walking up hills on their hind legs, right?
It's not something that they would normally do.
7 to 8 feet tall, it could have been a really tall guy in a costume.
Could have been, but how many 7 or 8 foot guys do you know?
True.
That hang out in the woods.
Yeah. What else could it have been if it was not a Sasquatch?
Well, that's a good question, because I don't know that it could have been anything other. I suppose it could. I mean, you know, maybe it appeared to be bigger. Maybe it was an optical illusion that made it look bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But it's highly unlikely when people start to describe things in detail, things that they've never seen before. You kind of have to believe them. You have to believe that if a person has a lot of details about something, usually a person that's lying about something doesn't have detailed information about it. Unless they've spent time, you know, researching and generating a lie. But even then, you know, it's hard to keep the story straight when you're telling a lie. But if you've actually seen something or experienced something, it's a lot easier to keep that story straight, to tell the details, to be able to relate it to people in a way that's understandable. If you don't become defensive about it, you know, if someone challenges you on that experience.
Here is another Class A, according to the BFRO. Family driving, have a late day encounter. We live near a national forest. One evening, my two 18-year-old daughters and I took my pickup down a two-track looking for rocks for our fire pit we were building. It was light out with a light rain. We were coming over a ridge on the trail, and when we started down, a huge Bigfoot ran across the trail in front of us. We all saw it well. It was covered in long black hair with a patch of white hair along its back near its shoulder. It was running with amazing speed in a forward-leaning position, and its arms seemed to almost touch the ground as it ran. We figured it to be approximately 9 feet tall. We could clearly see legs, arms, hands, head, muscle definition throughout its body, even with long hair. The hair on its back and body was longer than the hair on its head and arms. We didn't get to see its face, though, but the strangest part of this was it was running with a gray-colored wolf that I've seen multiple times before. It really appeared that they were together. The wolf was at full stride, about 15 feet behind it. Once it cleared the track, it went up the hill on the other side with an amazing speed. It seemed to pull away from the wolf at the last little bit we watched it. We tried to drive to where they were to try to see them again, but they were gone. That wolf ran very close to me on my four-wheeler, and I could tell you he is no little puppy. He leaves an almost 5.5-inch track, and the Bigfoot dwarfed the wolf. The next day, I went back for a look for prints, but the 14 hours of heavy rain overnight ruined the prints there may have been. We have found several other four-toed, very large prints in the area. A local researcher came out to investigate the area and was impressed with what is called tree structures. There was a couple found like a teepee style, and one is very large, but the trees are upside down. Weird. I have pictures of the things we've found and are happy to share all my evidence we have found to help others know these things are real and they exist.
I believe it.
Wow.
Well, you know, and having an expert, a scientist or someone who is an expert, come out and evaluate things like prints and stuff, they can tell if they're fake or not because they understand, you know, how the print is made, the depth of the print, whether the creature was running or walking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's telltale evidence in all of this stuff. If somebody is faking it, it's pretty easy to figure out if you're a scientific expert, because there's this telltale information within that print or within that evidence.
And that's where professors like Dr. Jeff Meldrum are so important to this research, because
right.
he knows foot morphology and local motion when it comes to the weight that a footprint leaves and why it leaves like more of an ankle or, you know, more of a, you know, or a heel
right.
or
yeah.
you know, why the toes do this, because, you know, he's trained in that.
Yeah.
So he can spot the fake ones. People have tested him. Yeah, that's why he's so important to this kind of field.
Absolutely. That's why we need science. We need scientists, because they verify what's real so that we can't be hoaxed, so that we can't be misled.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. We hope it was strange enough for you. If you want to listen to back episodes or listen to this one again or yell at Bill for his new age hooey, log on to strangeharbor.net.
If you have any interesting sightings or know anything about hauntings or ghosts, or if you've had some paranormal experiences, you know, let us know. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, we'd love to have you. You don't have to be a local person. You don't have to come to the studio. We can talk to you on the telephone. Let us know. We'd like to hear from you. And in that light, stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.